Chayaratamadapa Kunchabihari. Chayaratamadapa Kunchabihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Bharatari. Jaya Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Bharatari. Yasoda Nandana Prachachana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Prachachana Ranjana. Amunatira Vanachari. Amunatira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we are reading Canto 10, Chapter 8, and the text for today is text 40. So we can chant responsibly. Kim svapna etad uta deva maya. Kim va madiyo bata buddhi moha. Ato namusyaiva mamar bakasya. Ya kashanot patikas atma yoga. Kim svapna etad uta deva maya. Kim va madiyo bata buddhi moha. Ato amusyaiva mamarta bakasya. Ya kaschanant patika atma yoga. Kim svapna etad uta deva maya. Kim va madiyo bata buddhi moha. Ato amusyaiva mamar bakasya. Ya kaschanot patika atma yoga. Please chant. Kim svapna etaduta deva maya. Kim vamadyo bata buddhi moha. Ato anusyai vamamar bhakasya. Ya kashanat batika atma yoga. We'll do the word for word. Kim, whatever. Svapna, a dream. Etat, all this. Uta, or otherwise. Devamaya, an illusory manifestation by the external energy. Kim, va, or else. Madhya, my personal. Bata, indeed. Buddhi moha, illusion of intelligence. Ato, otherwise. Amusya, of such. Eva, indeed. Mama arbakasya, of my child. Ya, which. Kaschana, some. Otpatika, natural. Atma yoga, personal mystic power. So the translation of text 40 by Srila Prabhupada. Mother Yasoda began to argue within herself. Is this a dream or is it an illusory creation by the external energy? Has this been manifested by my own intelligence or is it some mystic power of my child? Purport. When Mother Yasoda saw this wonderful manifestation within the mouth of her child, she began to argue within herself about whether it was a dream. Then she considered, I'm not dreaming because my eyes are open. I'm actually seeing what is happening. I'm not sleeping, nor am I dreaming. Then maybe this is an illusion created by Devamaya. But that is also not possible. What business would the demigods have showing such things to me? I am an insignificant woman with no connection with the demigods. Why should they take the trouble to put me into Devamaya? That also is not possible. Then Mother Yasoda considered whether the vision might be due to bewilderment. I am fit in health. I am not diseased. Why should there be any bewilderment? It is not possible that my brain is deranged, since I am ordinarily quite fit to think. Then this vision must be due to some mystic power of my son, as predicted by Gargamuni. Thus she finally concluded that the vision was due to her son's activities and nothing else. Om Gyanati Mrandasya Gyananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopi Stam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Tamsa Jivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saham Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostite Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priyem Panchakalpa Tribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimata Ramapada Swami Tinamine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimata Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavadi Paschitya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So here is a very interesting and exciting glimpse into the mental life of Mother Yasoda. So generally mental life involves various acts. So they're internal acts, such as playing with an idea, remembering, being puzzled, realizing that one doesn't understand something, or even just thinking something, or daydreaming, or even suddenly realizing something. So these are all mental acts that are very internal. It's part of one's mental life. So Mother Yasoda is thinking to herself, and since she's an eternally perfect devotee of the Lord, it's actually fascinating to see her process of thinking. So, just to put everything in perspective, all the residents of Vrindavan and Dwarka, namely the cowherd men and the members of the Yadu family, they're eternally perfect devotees of the Lord. So, as the Lord descends by his causeless mercy upon this planet, so in order to help his pastimes, these devotees also come there or here. So they're not ordinary living entities or souls with all their learned patterns in their mind. Conditioned souls, they're actually liberated persons. So it means they're functioning exclusively on the transcendental plane, in their relationship with Lord Krishna. So they're called associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they're very intimately connected to him. And Srila Prabhupada, in his summary study of Srila Rupa Goswami's Nectar of Devotion, he says that Lord Krishna himself describes the position of these Nitya Siddhas, these eternally perfect beings that are so intimately connected with Lord Krishna, like Mother Yasoda. And So Srila Prabhupada's translating Srila Rupa Goswami's study of Nectar of Devotion, and he actually quotes something that Krishna says to, this is in a different part of his pastimes, he says to Satyabhama. So this is to put into perspective who are these Nitya Siddhas, these eternally perfect associates of his. So he says, "My dear wife, you should not consider that any associates are ever separated from me. They are my personal expansions. And as such, you must know that they are almost as powerful as I am. Because of their transcendental qualities, they are very, very dear to me. And I am very, very dear to them." So this is Krishna actually putting into perspective these extraordinary devotees that are so intimately related to him, and Mother Yasoda falls into that category. So, personal expansion of Lord Krishna. So, in this relationship, where Krishna is very, very dear we find that Mother Yasoda's acceptance of Krishna is as her son. And we read in Srila Sukadev Goswami saying a little bit further on in the 45th verse, he says, "The glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are studied through the three Vedas, the Upanishads, the literature of Sankhya Yoga, and other Vaishnava literature. Yet Mother Yasoda considered that Supreme Person her ordinary child." So just putting it into perspective, this is the personality that one is studying about through the Vedas. But for Mother Yasoda being so intimately connected with him, she's just viewing him as her son. So very extraordinary. she's seen him as an ordinary child. So Srila Prabhupada breaks down, there's a progression, how one actually can move towards that more intimate connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Srila Prabhupada breaks it down this way. A human being enters into the study of the Vedas to obtain knowledge. That means he's taking part in human civilization. So it's becoming civilized that one is actually studying the Vedas to obtain knowledge. Then as one advances further, one studies the Upanishads and gains Brahma Gyan, so knowledge of Brahman. And there's impersonal realization of the Absolute Truth. And then he advances further to Sankhya Yoga in order to understand the Supreme Lord. So when one understands that controller as Paramatma, meaning the super soul, one is engaged in the method of yoga. So you can see there's a progression. It's the study, one goes deeper into the study, one gains knowledge of Brahman or spirit as opposed to matter. One actually goes further and comes to understand that there's the Supreme Controller who's Paramatma within the heart. And this is called yoga. One is engaged in the method of yoga. And then looking at Mother Yasoda's position, she's actually gone through all of this, or you could say she surpassed all of this, in this progression that has to be gone through to come to a more intimate connection with the Supreme Lord. And she's come to a level where she's actually loving Krishna as her child. And therefore, she's accepted as being on the at the highest stage of spiritual realization. So internally, she's raising an argument right now. She's asking a question. Is this a dream or an illusion created by the external energy? And she's asking this question because she's just seen something that's challenged her intimate connection with the Supreme Lord as her son. Because through Krishna's wide open mouth, Mother Yasoda saw marvelous things, and it said she actually saw it in his belly. this is the vision of this particular universe. And we know it's this particular universe that she's getting a vision of because Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he analyzes Lord Brahma's words. So he has the connection with Lord Brahma. Later on, this will be the next pastime that takes place. And Lord Brahma comes to understand Krishna's position. So Lord Brahma says, Therefore, O infallible Lord, kindly excuse my offenses. I have taken birth in the mode of passion and am therefore simply foolish, presuming myself a controller independent of your lordship. My eyes are blinded by the darkness of ignorance, which causes me to think of myself as the unborn creator of this universe. So this is much further along, different pastime, where Lord Brahma, who assembles all the material ingredients of the universe and constructs things, he has a moment where his spiritual realization is such that he is even forgetting there's a supreme controller above me. So he's describing himself as being caught up in something of how this world operates, that material nature is conducting things. So he acknowledges that he actually has fallen under the influence of material nature, that ignorance has descended upon him, that he's actually forgotten that there's a supreme person above him. So one can infer that it's this universe that's been spoken of. Since the particular vision that Mother Yasoda was seeing of the universe, she was seeing the universe as being simultaneously inside Krishna's belly and outside as well. And this is by this inconceivable power of Yoga Maya, who's functioning as Krishna's energy to, not break the intimate connection of the devotee on a very advanced level of spiritual realization, not to break that connection with Krishna. So they remain oblivious to anything that may challenge the intimate connection. So Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, he explains, by showing himself within the universe, Lord Krishna, and by pervading the universe at the same time, Krishna shows his limited and his unlimited nature. So that's the significance of this particular event. So this particular confidential knowledge that Krishna has shows a limited and an unlimited nature is actually revealed by Lord Krishna to Mother Yasoda. And Krishna himself explains this in Bhagavad Gita. We get some understanding of how this works, because he puts it in his words, Lord Krishna. The material nature, which is one of my energies, is working under my direction, O son of Kunti, producing all moving and non-moving beings. Under its rule, this manifestation is created and annihilated again and again. That's from Bhagavad Gita 9:10. So, it would appear that material nature is functioning all on her own, but he's drawing our attention to the fact that he's behind the functioning of material nature. So, he's explaining that although he's separate from the activities of this material world, he remains the supreme director. And Srila Prabhupada, he explains that Lord Krishna is the will behind the material creation. So the management of the material world is being done by material nature, but Lord Krishna is willing it. So he remains the supreme dictator, you could say, because it's his will that's driving how everything is taking place. So Mother Yasoda, she was wondering if she was seeing a sequence of images or thoughts that were passing through her mind while she was sleeping. So she's thinking, you know, is this actually taking place? You know, I'm asleep and I'm just seeing the sequence of images or these created beings coming into being. And so she's actually wondering if it's just some fanciful image that is present there in the mind. But even there's the possibility that it could be like something in the conscious mind. She's just daydreaming. And actually, you could say there is a sequence that she's seeing. And this is the sequence that she's seeing. She's seeing moving, which is called Jagat, the unmoving, the Sthasnu, living entities. So she's seen all kinds of living entities. She's seen outer space, that's Nabhasvan, and she's seen all the directions. So when she looks and she sees all the directions, she's also seen mountains, she's seen islands, she's seen oceans, she's seen the surface of the earth, that's called Sadri. She's even seen the blowing wind, a very subtle element in the universe, that's called Savayu. And this wind is moving the planets. She's seen fire, she's seen the moon, she's seen the stars. And so this is like a progression of images, a sequence. It's a bit like, you know, if one imagines some sort of filming, videoing, one is seen like a progression, you know, one gets shown one image, then one gets shown the next image. So hers is first the moving and non-moving living entities, and then it broadens out where she's actually seeing outer space. So it moves from the living entities to outer space, and then the view is shown of all the directions. So like a broader view, and then it focuses to those, I guess, typographical features like mountains, oceans, islands, the surface of the earth. So it's like getting an aerial view. And then she's actually becomes aware of elements. So it gets more specific, like the blowing wind, fire. So she's getting aware of elements, and then it goes to the moon, the stars. So there's a next set of images that she gets to see, and the next set of images also form a sequence. So she sees the planetary systems. So again, it's going further back. So she's seen a much broader view of the entire universe. So planetary systems, how they're arranged. And then again, she's seen the elements, water, light, air, sky. And she even starts to see something of the creation, how it's getting created. So it's very interesting. It's like, you know, truly, it's like watching some visual clips. So, you know, you go into the broad and then you think of the specific. Oh, these are the elements that make that up, you know, like getting close-up views of Earth or close-up views of, well, I don't know how easy it would be to get a close-up view of space, but I guess some blank... so she starts to also see the transformation of the elements. So after seeing the specific elements, then seeing how they're actually shaping to form particular things. So You could say that the sequence of images that she sees are both gross and subtle of this cosmic manifestation. And Srila Prabhupada, he states that the manifested world is full of varieties of created beings. In fact, 8,400,000 species of life. So she's witnessing, it says, all moving and non-moving beings. So she becomes conscious of 8,400,000 species of life. So it's quite a broad range of clips, if you imagine all the various categories of living beings that there are. It's quite a rapid sequence of images that she's getting exposed to. But it does say she sees all of them. So, and it's, again, it's like observing something, because she becomes conscious, oh, there's superior and there's inferior beings. So, you know, observing, getting the close-up, getting the whole spectrum, and then, oh, some are superior, some are inferior. You know, there's some, you know, analysis of what's been seen. And like, even if one considers in human society, like our consideration, we consider humans to be superior living beings. And of course, even amongst humans, there's, you have to categorize it the way it's arranged, that, you know, the good human beings, there's bad human beings, there's equal human beings. You know, so she's getting to get a kind of analytical perspective as well while she's witnessing all of this in the whole sequence. And yeah, this kind of breakdown is given in a purport of Srila Prabhupada. I mean, the breakdown of, you know, the inferior, superior living beings in the second canto, in the fifth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So material nature or prakriti gives rise to this universe of moving and non-moving living beings. And remembering all that time, Krishna's the only director. And always there's that analogy that's made of, that helps one to understand Krishna being the only director, is it's like somebody's serving as a monarch, and the monarch is seated on the throne, but the ministers are conducting the various duties. But if the monarch is not there, the ministers wouldn't have any task to perform. It's dependent on the monarch being there. So in the same way, unconscious matter, it cannot do anything without being directed by the spiritual strength and energy of the Supreme Lord. And of course, we heard from Lord Brahma's prayers that he has to go through a lesson where he understands, oh, indeed, there is the Supreme Lord that's allowing for everything to take place. So it's by, he's the cause of why the world is repeatedly created. And Mother Yasoda, the question she's asking of herself after going through this whole sequence is, what if she's seeing some false concept? I mean, is it just a concept? Is she seeing a false concept? Like, she has some concept in it, but it's a false concept. Is it actually her own belief that's emerging, and she's just seeing her own belief? So she's actually asking if the sequence of images is in fact misleading or deceptive, or that it's not in accord with facts. She's wondering. And it's interesting because even Brahma tells Narada, his son, and these are the words of Lord Brahma, so it's not an unusual question to ask, because Lord Brahma tells Narada, his son, and these are his words, unless and until one is aware of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate truth beyond me, no one is sure... Oh, One is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. So it requires awareness of the Supreme Lord. One has to make the connection with him to really understand what one is seeing, or even to be able to analyze what one is seeing. So this is given by, these are the words of Lord Brahma in the second canto, the fifth chapter, in the 10th verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. So he's pointing to what that essential element is there to be able to understand everything. There has to be awareness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the question could be asked, why Narada, for instance, wasn't aware of the Supreme Lord, and why he misconceived Brahma to be the Supreme Lord. So he had the problem, Lord Brahma had the problem where he had a moment where he thought he's the Supreme Lord. Narada is somebody who one would expect would have been aware of the Supreme Lord, but he actually misconceived Brahma to be the Supreme Lord, his father. So Srila Prabhupada, he emphatically states that a liberated soul is never bewildered by such a mistaken concept. So Mother Yasoda would never run into that problem, that she's actually bewildered and thinking there's, or she's not aware that the Supreme Lord is responsible for everything. So the liberated soul is always directly connected with the Supreme Lord and doesn't see anything separate from him. So within her, her belief system is such that the Supreme Lord is responsible for everything she's seen. But she has a moment where she's wondering, is she not seeing correctly? But the belief is so strong, the connection with the Supreme is so strong, and it's such an intimate connection that in fact she's never really ever bewildered that the Supreme Lord is behind everything. It's very much there. So she doesn't have the problem that, say, Narada ran into or Lord Brahma ran into, because it's specifically Srila Prabhupada writing that a liberated soul is never bewildered or never has some sort of mistaken concept. So Mother Yasoda asks this of herself, but it's not possible. Everything is in place for her. So now, when there is bewilderment, such as happened to Lord Brahma or to Narada, one has to understand this, that it's happening by the will of the Lord. So the Lord is willing it that they have this bewilderment. And the reason is that so that other non-liberated persons may realize the real truth, because you want to see how they're processing the bewilderment, because it assists one too to come to understand that Krishna is behind everything. So Lord Krishna is always the Supreme, one could make that statement. And Mother Yasoda reasons that she's not dreaming, because her eyes are wide open. So she's acknowledging, my eyes are wide open, I'm seeing this, so it can't be that I'm dreaming, because dreaming happens with the eyes shut and one is resting. So no, it's not dreaming because my eyes are wide open. So of course, you know, if you take into account that a mental act can also include daydreaming, you could think, you know, she's just actually seen this whole sequence, but it's just something that's not factual. But that's discounted by the fact that she is understood to be a realized soul. And for a realized soul, there's never that problem that anything is separated from the connection with the Supreme Lord. So that connection is there. So it means even were it to have been a daydream as such, there's not a problem that what she's seen is not connected to the Supreme Lord. It's automatically understood. It's part of her being. So she concludes that she's neither sleeping nor dreaming. This is her conclusion after going through all of this. So In terms of whether she's seen a deceptive sequence of images, she reasons that were this to have been the case, she would have had to have been, this would have had to have been created by the demigods. So if this was all like deceptive, like things weren't factually how these, the, you know, the aerial view, the specific view of the elements, the other aerial view of the universes, she feels that if these images were to have been deceptive ones or the sequence wasn't accurate, then it would have been something caused by the demigods. But then she considers, well, she doesn't actually have a personal connection with the demigods, so it's very unlikely that they're causing these images, because after all, why would they specifically do that in relation to herself? Now, considering that, you know, a liberated soul is, Krishna says, is as powerful as he is, it's very interesting the position that she sees herself in, how she views herself as being really quite insignificant, that it's very unlikely that the demigods would have been exposing her to a whole sequence of images. It's not possible. I mean, she sees herself as a very insignificant person. Her only connection is her intimate connection with Lord Krishna, who's just her son. So, now, in her own mental ordering, or the operation of her own mental ordering becoming disrupted in some way, she asks the question, is she actually deranged? Has she become insane? I mean, this is an intelligent person. She's asking these things. So she rejects that she could have become insane. That insanity could be a possible reason for what she's seeing. She thinks that if she's seen the form of something, so for instance, the fact that she saw water, air, fire, so she saw those elements, and then that she saw what the elements were forming into, be it the earth mass or space, she was able to automatically see the connection between the element and what was created from it, because she had the ability to see the presiding deity of that particular substance before it assumed a gross form. So she, as a liberated soul, she's making the connection with the deity who's responsible for the control of the particular element. It's so in part of her. So she saw, even when she saw material qualities like goodness, passion, and ignorance, she saw these as all belonging to the material world, and that they weren't touching the Supreme Lord. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, Srila Sukadev Goswami, he specifically states that they all belong to the material world and they don't touch the Supreme Lord. And so these three elements, goodness, passion, and ignorance, they cannot act by increasing or decreasing simultaneously. There's always the element of the will of the Supreme Lord, how things are operating. So those three elements, they're always kept in some sort of, what would be the word, existence. It's not that one completely obliterates the other, or that they all rise up at the same time. They're always shifting, and that's indicating the will of the Supreme Lord behind them. And so here's Krishna explaining that in Bhagavad Gita. These are his words. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor they can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained by knowledge can see all this. So This is the position of Mother Yasoda. That's from Bhagavad Gita 15:10. A great amount of knowledge is required, be it from Bhagavad Gita, the other Vedas, and the knowledge being heard from a spiritual master to be able to perceive these things. It's only possible that one can perceive these things, how material nature is operating. Otherwise, one's under the spell of the material nature, so one can't perceive it properly. That analytical perspective that Mother Yasoda had, that's come because of having all the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, so to speak, within herself, and all the Vedas within herself, having heard from a spiritual master and properly understood all that knowledge. So she can perceive correctly. It's not possible to have this analytical perspective she had unless one has gone through that process of receiving knowledge. So one can infer that. And just based on Lord Krishna's saying that one whose eyes are not trained in knowledge cannot see all this. So one can understand Mother Yasoda's eyes are certainly trained in knowledge. So she's seen with knowledge. So you can see how insanity doesn't feature. This is the question she poses. Rather, she's looking with knowledge. And, you know, this point that she was seeing all the living beings that existed, and, you know, within material nature, Srila Prabhupada says, and these are his words, every living being is quitting his body under certain circumstances. He's living under certain circumstances, and he's enjoying under certain circumstances, under the spell of material nature. Those who have developed spiritual knowledge can see that the spirit is different from the body and is changing its body and enjoying in different ways. This is Srila Prabhupada explaining this. So everybody else is just going through the motions of being under the control of material nature. They're in their body, they're leaving their body, they're going into a new body, but it's without knowledge. It's just being subjected to material nature operating. So you can see how it's just not possible for one who is under the control of material nature to be seen so clearly as Mother Yasoda was seen. So the vision, it was a vision that was actually shown to Mother Yasoda. So she's seen with the eyes of knowledge, but the vision was shown to her by Krishna, because he's the will behind everything. So he's the will behind material nature, but he's also the will in terms of what he's revealing to his close, intimately connected devotee. And so in the vision, it's interesting because it also included seeing herself along with her husband and son in Vraja. And she saw all these marvelous things in Krishna's belly. So not only all that broad view, but also seeing herself, observing herself, her son, her husband, Vraja, also there. So Srila Vishwana Chakravarti Thakur, he says that this kind of vision is meant for the reverential devotee. And such a vision was shown to Mother Yasoda because she falls into that category of being a very revered devotee. In fact, her lotus feet are touched by all the intimate, confidential devotees of Lord Krishna. So she's in a very elevated position of spiritual realization. And this was kind of a fascinating glimpse into her mental functioning and how the complexity of what was seen was analyzed by her, you know, very simply, where finally she's remembering. So that's another one of her mental acts. She remembers what Garga Muni has said about Krishna having powers as good as Narayan. So she concludes, it must be due to his power that actually all this is being witnessed by her. So she concludes correctly. But it was just something she had to analyze, because it's, in some sense, it broke the intimate connection that she was having, to see that not only did her son have one kind of nature, but it was also this unlimited nature. And that's always present in Krishna, but just at the right moment, the vision got revealed to her. So she got to see his limited aspect and his unlimited aspect. And she was put into a position of having to do a bit of analysis and go through her mental internal functioning. So if there's any thought on this particular verse or subject matter.
Thank you, Mataji. Beautifully explained these verses. Just wonderful. However, I still don't understand very well their villagers, simple villagers, yet they're rich. Since before Krishna was born, there were many events, extraordinary events happening, in which indicated that the boy that was ready to born was not an ordinary child. In this particular pastime, there's an extraordinary event. The kid opened his mouth and gave her right away a very thorough astronomy, biology class, understanding many phenomena that happen in the world, and she right away connects this with her relationship with God, with Krishna. However, there's a dot that is still not connected there. That is, God is this kid that has his open mouth. That this kid is God himself. That part, no, she forgets, oh, it's my relationship with God, everything is fine, but my son is God. I don't understand still that. Okay, this is a no ordinary child. Thank you, Krishna. You're just teaching me all this. But.
Well, it's a transcendental relationship. So the processing is with transcendental emotions, and means she's already carrying great love for the Supreme Lord. So it means her whole vision is colored by that love for the Supreme Lord. And looking from that perspective of great love means that she's in a very protected space. Like if one imagines when one feels loved, one feels very protected, very cared for, very sheltered. So on the transcendental plane, it's that magnified thousands of times, feeling very sheltered, very cared for, very protected. So she's actually in that very safe, secure position because of that relationship with the Supreme Lord. But her love for him takes the form of wanting to protect and care for him. And but because she's in that extremely sheltered position, anything that she's doing is coming with strength. It's a position of great strength. So the strength of her devotion carries that expression of love towards the Supreme Lord. So that strength of devotion allows her to deal with him as though he's a regular child. Her position is a very sheltered position. She's protected by the Supreme Lord, but her love for him is permitted to manifest that way in a parental way. So it's a very intimate, close connection. The fact that it's obscured his position, that indeed he has the control of the entire world in his hands.
Some yes. kind of relation, huh? Like she's like not bewildered, but like obnubilated by that love that she doesn't see or disconnect one love from the other one.
The love is fully connected, but because of the role and the way her love is manifesting, because it's of a very intimate nature where she's serving very closely in a parental manner, she's protected from, in some sense, seeing the other aspects of the Supreme Lord, because that would harm that intimate connection being of the parents-son kind of relationship. It would put her into a different mindset. I mean, one can understand that the mood would be different. So Krishna doesn't want to disrupt that mood. But when she's witnessing these other aspects, these real position as, you know, the controller and director of material nature, of creation, annihilation, of, you know, even directing how living beings are changing their bodies, etc. She actually is still in a sheltered position when she's viewing all that. Her great love for the Supreme Lord allows her to look at it dispassionately. And she's able to like push it aside quite easily because the transcendental love for the Supreme Lord continues. It doesn't change anything. The intimate connection continues. So on a transcendental plane, the mood of servitude is the most prominent feature. And so that the mood of parental servitude cannot change in any way. It's already established. So hence she's able to dispassionately analyze, consider insanity. Is it insanity? Is the sequence of events perhaps, you know, not factual? She considers all these things, but it's from a sheltered position. So she's able to just put it aside and carry on. Yeah. It's a very sheltered position. That's anyway how I understand it.
Hare Krishna, Mother Krishna, Ashram Masterji, thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice, wonderful points. The point that really came to mind is, maybe you could expand on some of these points, but the point that came to mind, you were mentioning that Mother Jasoda, by a combination of Krishna's mercy and her ability to see through the eyes of knowledge, she was able to see things as they are. She was granted divine vision. And we hear in the Brahma Samhita that if one sees with the eyes of prema, like you were mentioning, then one can see things as they are. Primanjana charita bhati vilochanena santasadaiva hridayeshu vilokayansi yam shama sudanam chintaguna swarupam govindam adipurusham tamaham bhajami. And the same is also mentioned in chapter 10, verse 11 of the Gita, the nice verse that says, Tesham satatam yutanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam samyena malpuyanti te. Tesham eva nu kampa atam maham agyanjam tamaha nishayami amabhavasto gyandipena basvata. Krishna says that one who sees with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. Why? Because I open their eyes with the torch of knowledge. We see that if it's dark in a room, unless you have a light or a torch, you won't be able to see things as they are. And Prabhupada also quotes Rupa Goswami in chapter 7, verse 3. He says, Shruti, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu says, Shruti Shruti Purana Adi Panchadacha Vidimvina I Kantiki Hadeya Bhaktir Utpata Yaiva Kalpate. It says that any devotional activity, any devotional thought, any devotional word, or any devotional actions that is not in harmonious concordance with Shruti, Shrimiti, Purana, Adi is simply a disturbance and one cannot see things as they are. And one thing I appreciate about in chapter 6, verse 30 of the Gita, Krishna describes how we should see things. The same thing. He says, one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am never lost, etc. But when we see competition, when we see impatience, we see that people are not happy. But if you see Krishna everywhere, then you'll be happy. And we see, I'll just use one other example, maybe you could expand on these points. We see that Prahlad Maharaj, he saw the Supreme Controller, even in a pillar. But Hiranyakashipu couldn't see the Supreme Controller, even in Nrisingadev. Death personified, the Supreme Controller is standing right before you. And so he couldn't see a great personality in Nrisingadev, nor could he see a great personality in Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad Maharaj was a great personality, not on his own merit, but on his merit that he was connected to the Supreme Lord. And we see that a computer is attractive when it's connected to its power source and unattractive when it's disconnected from its power source. And so there's a nice quote from Buddha. He says, if a fool be associated with a wise man, even for all his life, he will perceive the truth as little as a spoon perceives a taste of soup. If an intelligent man be associated with a wise man for 1 minute only, he will perceive the truth as much as the tongue perceives a taste of soup. And Prahlad Maharaj, he wasn't so arrogant that he was thinking, I'm a great personality. He also said, Hiranyakashipu, you're also a great personality, not on the strength of your opulence, your wealth, born the strength that Jivara Swarup Hoy Krishnada Nitya Das Tatasta Shakti Beta Beta Prakash, because you're a servant of Krishna, not because you're a servant of your senses. So there's one quote that says, surround yourself with the dreamers and the doers, the believers and the thinkers, but most of all, surround yourself with those who see the greatness within you, even when you don't see it within yourself. And Hiranyakashipu, he didn't see the greatness within himself. So what are some steps we can move forward to see Krishna everywhere, not see competition, not see envy, not see impatience? Because we see when we see these things, we're always miserable. We're not happy at all when we see Krishna everywhere. So what are some steps we can move forward to develop this Primanjana Charita Bhati Vilochanena?
Yeah, having one's eyes tinted with the salve of love is part of the cultivation in the practice of bhakti yoga. So one's cultivating that vision. So cultivating that vision is helped along a lot by hearing about these very beautiful, intimately connected associates of Lord Krishna, because it gives one a picture of somebody immersed in that loving devotion. So one may feel oneself distant from being in a perpetual state of loving devotion because the material nature is operating, and so one's vision is colored by how one is associating with a way of being, you know, according to one's psychophysical makeup. So one's psychophysical makeup may be dictating that one is seeing competition, or one is seeing, disharmony of some sort. But then one references knowledge, because that's the means for cultivating the vision of connection with Krishna. So then one references knowledge, so okay, one is seeing disharmony, or one is seeing competitiveness, and one remembers, oh, okay, so I'm at the mercy of some particular way of being within myself that's causing me to see that very prominently. So why don't I take shelter of Lord Krishna instead? Because I would prefer not to be under the control of this way of seeing. So my way of taking shelter then can be that one remembers these great personalities. I mean, you spend time often quoting the glories of Prahlad Maharaj, so you're acknowledging this great personality that, you know, even under great duress, he remained constant in his vision. So just choosing such a personality, which I've heard my spiritual masters say, that then one tries to remember their words, one tries to recall how they dealt with situations, can go a long way to helping one on the path of devotion, coming to that steady position of constant love for the Supreme Lord. So what you're doing every time you're remembering Prahlad Maharaj can be used to your advantage, that when the way of being that is viewing the disharmony or the competitiveness which is causing disturbance, one remembers something of Prahlad Maharaj, maybe some words he said where he's in a situation where he's dealing with his teachers trying to teach him exactly that, competitiveness and, all the ugliness that goes along with being a materialistic, or a person with a materialistic vision, how he responded to that. So, you know, one can go and read that or remember something of his response to his teachers that are teaching, you know, you be this way, and you, the person who's experiencing that, the horrors of having to have a materialistic vision and how it's actually causing distress to oneself. One remembers how Prahlad Maharaj dealt with it. I mean, choosing a very great personality and reading how they respond to things is very helpful. So that should be a response, I would say, at least remembering what my spiritual master said, that choosing a personality is in sort of like following in their footsteps, and then one is protected at those times when some way of being within oneself is rearing its ugly head. So reading further, yeah, and remembering. So just as Mother Yasoda solved her problem by remembering Gaga Muni's words of, you know, this is a child that's as great as Narayan, she was able to say, okay, this must be the answer. So in your case too, you're struggling, oh, okay, Prahlad Maharaj says this is the answer actually. And then having to put into practice what one has learned, that's always the challenging part, and that's where a lot of intelligence is required, because one's fighting with the modes of nature. So, you know, one can devise a strategy even. So one knows that sometimes during the course of one's day, one's going to run into something that's going to trigger. Yeah, it triggers. Well, it triggers internally. It's like, you know, in psychological theory, there's a stimulus for a whole sequence of thoughts. Yeah. So you see externally something and it triggers. So, you know, you come to recognize what is the trigger for you personally. You know, what is it that you witness externally that triggers a whole sequence of thought that makes you so disturbed, and, you know, the competitive part is disturbing. So once you understand what that trigger is, then you have to actually think, okay, I'm going to avoid that trigger. Yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to devise a strategy. You have to be intelligent. So you remember Prahlad Maharaj, you remember how he dealt with things, how he was fearless in saying exactly his views to his teachers who were trying to teach him competitiveness. So you remember that. It's a source of strength. And then you also use intelligence for how you actually protect yourself with the reality of, okay, this is the stimulus for this whole sequence of thoughts. I'm going to avoid that stimulus. I'm not going to expose myself to that stimulus. Or I'm going to actually say these words to myself when that stimulus happens. Because you have to break the sequence. That's how psychological theory works. And it's very practical, but it requires some work. So one can't passively, you know, be exposed to the stimulus and go through it over and over again and get equally disturbed over and over again. You have to break it. So, okay, this is a stimulus that sets me off. I'm going to avoid it. Or I'm going to, if I happen to come close to that stimulus, these are the words I'm going to say to myself. Write it down and read it to yourself. You know, because you want to break that internal sequence, that thought pattern. So, anyway, some thoughts. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Thank you.